It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscovered Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
We're making an ad.
Snapping ad.
This is where I think if we're doing it right, Alec Baldwin comes in. He says a couple things. Mm-hmm. He listens to the podcast every week. Yep. Has he been canceled? Was Alec Baldwin the one who killed somebody? I hear that Gary Sinise is free.
Oh, okay, great.
He hasn't worked since 2020.
So what would be the script that we would have Gary Sinise say for the Napping Through Happy Hour podcast?
Listen to this damn show. Damn it.
The Napping Through Happy Hour podcast brought to you by Geekscape.
Real life, real drama, real time.
I'm Gary Sinise.
That's the
ad.
That's the ad. That's the ad.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Matt, we are here once again talking about weird sketch comedy, which is Al TV, Volume 3. Japan really takes a hit on this one.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Wow. We're going to get into it, but holy cow, there's wow. I mean, we got some bits that recur from previous Al TVs. Coffee drinkers also are not looked upon kindly. Still.
No, he comes down on them too. But all right, so we have a guest. We had Patrick McDonald from Smosh on for episodes 1 and 2, which kind of set a standard for me, which is if we're going to talk about Weird Al sketch, we should always have someone who's got more ties to the sketch world than you and I have. So I'm very excited to bring in one of my good friends. We have Katie Hampton on the show from Geekscape, from the Geekscape main show. I'm sure you're very devastated to be trading out the exotic Elsesser name for the very generic Hampton name.
I'm so pumped.
Must be a real struggle to have a pronounceable last name suddenly. But here we are. I had reached out to you in the past to have you do the podcast. And you were like, you know, I enjoy Weird Al. You need to get my fiance Mark on the show, which I do want to get Mark on the show. But yeah. Then as we were about to do Al TV 3, I'm like, you know what? Let's bring Katie on for this one. What is your like first real exposure to Weird Al? Because boy, do I hope it wasn't this.
Oh, no, I wasn't in existence when this occurred. I wasn't even a glimmer in my parents' eye. Shout out to Before My Time on the Geekscape Network, because this could totally be one of those. But yes, this was Before My Time. But I was introduced to Weird Al probably in like the early 2000s, like a full 2 decades after the reign of this show.
Okay.
And it was mostly his music. Keep in mind that I got into comedy, into sketch a little bit older in life, like more of my like 20s and on, because I was raised in a very strict religious background. So my friend in high school actually introduced me to Weird Al songs in like maybe like 2005, 2006. So like I was I was late to the game on a lot of this stuff. And I was like, my baloney, Eat It, which is a special shout out for this episode. I didn't come to understand any of the Weird Al stuff until much later. So this was so fascinating, because you could see how 80s-tastic this show was, but also you could see so many influences on modern day sketch comedy that I was like, oh shit, they do this on The Late Show. Oh shit, oh, yeah. They do this with Scott Aukerman. I feel like I see all of Scott Aukerman's career right now just watching.
For sure.
We talked about it a pretty decent amount in the first one, but I to this day truly believe that like in 1984, 1985, like Thomas Lennon and Michael Ian Black and all of the people who created the state were watching on TV and being like, wait, you can do sketch comedy like that? Like in comparison to what else was out there, because this really does feel like, look, some of this has aged not so great, and we will definitely be getting into that, but this really feels like the beginning of what would become the alternative comedy movement of like a lot of irreverence, a lot of like purposely bombing, like bad jokes on purpose, like making fun of the failure more than writing a successful joke. Like there's a lot going on here.
Leaning into the awkward, like, I mean, you even get like senses of like early Will Ferrell stuff. Like you get the like, I don't care if you don't laugh. I find this hysterical and I'm going to keep doing this bit until it's dead.
Well, adding to the fact that he's alone in a room, so there's no laughter. You know, he's just delivering these jokes to no one.
This it feels like how a comedy Twitch streamer does things.
Yes.
Like I love, he even says in this episode, I'll keep doing this until I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, for sure. It even reminds me of like how I had such sympathy for in, you know, the height of the pandemic when all the late night shows had to go remote and like Jimmy Fallon and they're just delivering these monologues in their living room to no one. And it's like, how hard is it to gauge your material like that? Like, it just seems so awkward. It's so hard to deliver that naturally and feel like it's like you're in on it and not like you're cringing for this person.
Yeah. But I will say on that specific topic, that is why I really never paid attention to Seth Meyers. And now I am a diehard Seth Meyers fan because no one moved into that more seamlessly than he did.
I'm going to shut you down right now. Amber Ruffin.
Well,
took
she's
off
part of
in
Seth Meyers. Yeah.
Yeah. No, she totally is. And like, I agree, but I feel like Amber Ruffin did it more succinctly and because her show premiered in the pandemic.
Yeah.
That
so
is true. Okay.
No audience. And she was doing these cutaway bits. She was doing a lot of these like very hilarious, like coming up with her own songs, like very weird out. Like she's an excellent singer, hilarious comedian. And I was laughing hysterically with like, there's no audience, there's no laugh track, there's no nothing. And like, they really leaned into the uncomfortable in the pandemic, but they shot it on a set. That was incredible. Yeah.
Well, going to say is when Seth Meyers was like up in his attic or whatever doing the show, I could care less. When he started to do the show where it was just him at the desk with like his writers and that was it, it was so charming. It gave me that throwback feeling of what I've talked about, I think, on the past Al TV, my love of the original run of Talk Soup, where you're just watching like Craig Kilborn and John Henson just try to make their cameramen laugh. Like they're not doing a bit for anybody, but like the 10 people that have their sense of humor. And I remember reading in an interview that like Seth Meyers was like, I really don't want audiences to come back. Like I am having so much fun just not caring if this joke is mainstream enough for the audience just trying to make them laugh. So let's dive into this a little bit. This aired on July 7th, 1985. And some of the humor feels every minute like it's 1985. And we talked about this before where it's like, you know, you sometimes wonder, I can't believe they didn't put all the Al TVs on any type of home video format. And now it's like, knowing who Al is now, I'm sure he's not exactly thrilled that these are available on YouTube for people to revisit either to a certain extent. But I do like that at this point, the pirate radio setup has dramatically become more elaborate and more outrageous than the first two episodes. And the Weird Al one night stand gag has continued into a third episode.
Wow. It was like within the first 3 minutes.
It's instantly.
Yeah.
He goes right to it. Like everyone was waiting for more of this bit for over a year. A side note, it's funny because he cuts to a lot of existing clips. Okay, so the joke is, and he says the name again, by the way. I don't know who this person is, but he multiple times says the name Trixie, the woman who won this. And then he goes like, Trixie, what did you think? And it cuts to this clip of a woman walking like with her head in her hands. going, it's a one night stand that I'll never forget, but not in a good way. Like, she's clearly like upset.
Like, she like needs to leave.
She needs to leave. And I thought, like, because of the way Al works, I was like, is this from something else? Like, is he grabbing a clip from an existing piece of media? But I could not find it. If you Google the phrase with quotes, it's a one night stand I'll never forget, nothing comes up.
That's weird.
So I don't know.
Come on, internet.
I know, exactly, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it doesn't, either way, it doesn't change the cringiness of that joke. And we said last time that, like, obviously the joke here is supposed to be that Al is such a nerd that winning this contest is like, who would ever want this? Like, I get that. it's supposed to be a joke about him.
Yeah.
Being, well, a dork. But
I mean, it's not like he started self-deprecation in comedy,
no,
but
not.
Like,
yeah,
he started this style where it's like, I mean, I almost felt like some Lil Dicky stuff coming out of this, where it was just like,
yeah,
you know, like, I'm going to make fun of just like how bad I am sexually,
yeah,
just to like make that the comedy and bite you before, you know, you get to the punchline,
yeah,
and I'll do it first.
Yeah.
But yeah, it felt like, okay, now we're beginning into like the Napoleon Dynamite type of comedy.
Right, 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 right.
It's starting there. And just as quickly as he finally brings a conclusion to his bit that he started over a year ago, it's time to start the new one, which is the Be an Al Roadie contest.
This is great.
It's great.
This is great. Because you know what? I don't think I can remember the name of the band. And even if I could, I wouldn't say it just because I don't want to like be too, like, I know there's a band that charged for this, that did this exact thing and made it a premium thing, like on a Kickstarter, where it was like, if you pledge this amount of money, you can be our roadie for a day. And a bunch of people did it. They paid money to work for the band for a day. And as soon as I saw this bit in Al TV, I was like, this man is like an oracle to see these sorts of things coming down the pipe. Because now,
well,
yeah,
it's
so
it
crazy.
It does feel like those skeezy internships that
totally,
like, that try and hunt you down after college, which I totally fell prey to in the Shakespeare sense.
Yeah.
And definitely paid for an internship at a Shakespeare company, because let's be real, Shakespeare doesn't make that much money these days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I love how quickly in his delivery of this, it goes from like, you just like submit to this today, and then quickly turns into like a late night infomercial.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, there's more.
And it's like the least appealing pitch possible. It's like, would you like to lug all of the equipment in our suitcases while we don't even acknowledge your existence?
I just could not believe to see that. Because again, I saw a band doing, I watched a band do this. And those
I'm
people,
so curious
those
what
people
this band's
were
name is.
So. I'm not just saying it. I honestly cannot remember. But
it was
a show with friends of mine at, and it was one of the other bands who I didn't know as well. And I could not believe these people were so excited because they got the laminate for backstage, they were just part of the show, and they were so happy to be part of the show. They paid hundreds of dollars.
No,
I swear.
Oh, yeah, God.
That's insane. Speaking of the infomercial aspect of this, we then get to the stereo, calling your provider to make sure that you're getting Al TV in stereo. If you're not getting Al TV in stereo, you're only getting half the picture or whatever. But there's that great bit where he's like, all of you who are already listening in stereo, you can leave. I want to talk to the people who don't yet. And he gets real close to the camera and he just goes, what are you, stupid or something?
I have to say, like, Weird Al has always been bonkers and, like, so fun to just be, like kind of, like, pick apart and, like, see all these things. The scariest he ever is when he gets so fucking close to the camera that all you can see is, like, the production lights reflected in his glasses.
Oh my
and
God,
it's just,
yes,
like, a silhouette of his body. It's terrifying. And he does this multiple times in this episode.
And he's yelling at you.
Yes.
He's like, what kind of an idiot are you? Everyone's figured this out but you.
Shout out to people with bipolar.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so good. I still stand by that I talked about this in the first two episodes, but I love when he does the music news. We get into the music news. The Ghostbusters joke is so smart, and it is smart to only like big music nerds, of the idea of like he's being sued by George Harrison for ripping off My Sweet Lord, which I'm not sure if you do you get that, like, because I just found this out like a year ago. Do you get what
so
that joke
is? I had to go through the history of this because this is, again, happened before I existed. So I had to like understand. I was like, wait, there was a lawsuit. I vaguely remember in terms of Ghostbusters in the song. And then I like kind of went down a rabbit hole and I was like, okay, which one of these were jokes and which one of these were like actual news?
Yeah. So
Ghostbusters, the frivolous lawsuits thing only got worse.
Yeah, so the first one that I think most people know is Ghostbusters got sued by Huey Lewis in the News because the entire melody of the Ghostbusters theme is "I want a new drug." It is like note for note, "I want a new drug," which was only made more controversial because the producers approached Huey Lewis to write the Ghostbusters theme and he said no. So then they hired someone else.
To be fair to Ray Parker, they probably told him make this sound like Huey Lewis.
Yeah, because
that's such a common note for this type of thing. They probably said make this 100%. Sound like Huey Lewis.
But the quote that I always love from Huey Lewis was when he got approached to do the soundtrack for Back to the Future. He said, "I didn't really want to do it, but I said yes because they'd probably just steal my sound anyway." Like, he was like still so bitter about it. Yeah.
Wow.
The My Sweet Lord, the reason he brings up My Sweet Lord by George Harrison is that was also a very infamous lawsuit because My Sweet Lord completely steals the lyrical and musical melody of He's So Fine by the Ronettes, the like doo-wop group from the 60s. And that was a lawsuit in the early 70s. And I think it was one of the first actual like copyright infringement lawsuits. Like it was the first
public one.
It was an
early one. And that was kind of sad because George actually admitted, George said he basically admitted he did it and that he didn't mean to. Yeah. Like he accidentally ripped it off, which is a thing that happens. I mean, you come up with a melody 100%. And you're like, this sounds great. And then unless someone tells you, not to go on too much of a tangent, but a story I always love from Paul McCartney, when he wrote the song Yesterday, he played that song for everyone he could because he was sure he stole it.
No
way.
Because
it came to him so completely. Like the idea was just so in his head. He was like, I must have heard this somewhere else. But he didn't. It just was there. Like he just pulled it. But he was so nervous he was accidentally stealing something because of how good it was.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
In his own mind. I'm such like a music dolt. Like it does. But like I know that feeling when writing a bit or writing a joke.
Yeah.
And you're like, someone must have said this. And then you have to go on a Google search. I love that all of these references were purely from their own brains, from their writing team, from just Weird Al and like knowing this so well.
Yeah.
Like, they're not Googling it. They're not Shazamming.
No,
like, is this the melody of something else?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
this is, and I agree with you too, Katie, on the amount of times that I've had like a t-shirt idea where I'm like, someone has gotten to have beaten me to this joke.
To this.
Like the Nick Cage one, the fact that no one had beaten me to the "Despite All My Rage, I'm Still Just Nick in a Cage," like I searched everywhere to make sure that shirt didn't already exist. I have one idea that I have not figured out how to actually make it a shirt people want to buy, but I really want to do something with Linkin Park, where it's
that's good.
Perfect.
That's good. I like that.
You know, we talked about how Al really like goes hard on Japan, and we will get there. But Matt, I got to ask you, do you think that one of the reasons that Prince maybe kept saying no to parodies is that he goes in hard on Prince like four different times in this?
So I think at this point, Prince had already said no. I think that he had asked Prince and Prince said no. So I think maybe Al is trying to do some, maybe what he considers gentle ribbing back. But boy, is he
like dedicates the whole final segment to Prince being like a Satanist.
That guy was like, I just looked over there. I didn't even know it was him. And his bodyguards put a metal rod through my head.
Right. And then the kid who like was clearly just like somebody's like son visiting for a day.
Yeah.
Who was like, he popped my balloon.
He popped my balloon. He burned down my house and he ran off with my girlfriend.
I love his
records.
Music. Yeah.
Like that's probably the one that's the most relatable to today because it's kind of when we're watching our favorite musicians get canceled,
so
and it's like,
true.
Oh, but I still really like Thriller. like,
yeah. That was the note that I put down. I was like, Prince bit, it's hilarious because it's so applicable. Yeah. Like we give them so much leeway, yeah, despite all of their like current actions.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's true.
But it was such an interesting thing because he actually pulls on the record of Purple Rain and like, yeah, makes a bit about it. And he's like, maybe you should just go and buy this record. And he flashes his own record. Like, buy this over Purple fucking Rain.
Honestly, of all the things, like, there's joking, but Al literally is telling people to take your copy of Purple Rain, return it, and buy Dare to Be Stupid instead. That is an act of aggression. Like, that is, I mean, like, holy cow, that is a crazy thing to do. And, I mean, considering Prince is, at this point, and still, like, the top of the top of the top. Al is huge, but, I mean, no, Prince is untouchable. And so it's not like Al is punching down, but... No, it was still shocking to see him do that.
It was sort of, it was like the balls that he had. I mean, he was like, what, 25 at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, that's one of those like jokes that you make among your friends.
Yeah.
But to have that actually broadcast out,
that's a good point. We had said earlier, like, you know, there's a really early Al parody there. He just destroys Billy Joel and then he didn't release it because he was... just didn't feel good
too
about
mean,
it.
Yeah.
It was too mean, but he is still pretty willing to take people to task if he thinks they deserve it. I mean, these Al TV examples are huge of just like, yeah, he is definitely going to make fun of you. He very shortly after that makes fun of David Lee Roth for doing Dave TV. And Al goes on this long rant like, Dave TV, what a great idea. Oh my God, I wish I thought of that. What a brilliant...
So I need to mention one more thing with the Prince thing.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember what the back masked message was that he said was on the Purple Rain record?
I didn't write it down.
He couldn't grow a mustache?
Yes, yeah, Satan won't let me grow a full mustache.
Oh, God.
I was like, and I'm sitting there looking at his little two caterpillars sprouting out of his nose. I was like, this is ballsy even for him to say.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, you know what? I do think Prince had rejected him at this point, so maybe that's what we're seeing here is like Al taking out some aggression, which does come up again later in Al TV type things. Like we see him get mad at Eminem later on for agreeing to the parody and then not the video. And Al will make you look dumb if you don't play the game with him.
He's like a mob boss.
Yeah.
He's a comedy mob boss. Like,
for sure.
It's funny, too, because he can get away with it by just calling it parody. And I feel like this is where a lot of people have gotten the whole, like, I can say something terrible and say, it's just a joke. But, like, with Al, it's actually really fucking funny.
I know. Yeah, yeah. He has found the right balance for it. He's able to do it because it is, like, it's just lighthearted enough that it's like, how could you get really, really mad at this? But at the same time, if you just look at bullet points, like I forgot the mustache thing is crazy. And even just the straight, like, yeah, return your Prince records and buy mine instead. Like in someone else's mouth, that is like, I'm going to kill you. Like, that is no joke. Like that is like, you are taking money off. Like it's
off
crazy.
The table.
It's
kind of bonkers.
Yeah.
So this is something that we didn't see in the first two Al TV specials, which is the appearance of celebrities doing bumpers.
On
the first
one,
when Elvira popped up on the screen, it was all caps in my notes.
Hands in the air and I said Elvira.
It was all caps in my notes too, and he also tags her tag saying that she went to an insane asylum after doing that. Like it's amazing he's still doing bits, and even though he's got these bumpers blew my mind. I was like, how did they get it? I mean, I guess it's an MTV thing, but like some of them, they're like literally laughing through it. Like you can
see.
Dude,
Vanity can't even get through hers. She
Vanity
like
cannot
starts laughing midway through hers.
That was the and best then, take oh, they could shit. Get for Vanity.
Who was the last one? Oh, the last one killed me because
what was the
Liberace? Taylor?
Yeah, Liberace shows up.
Fucking and Liberace, and he's literally reading off of a cue card. Like you can see him reading, and he's trying to be very sincere.
Yeah, and we also get Andy Taylor from Duran Duran telling us to brush and floss after every meal.
And he's like, and it really works, and he just shows his janky teeth. Genius.
That was a great bit. I love how many people he got to play along at this point. It's a great example of how his influence is rising, that now you're seeing all these people appear. Like, that is very impressive.
Yeah. And yeah. So those are clearly not like him taking something out of context. They are saying Al TV.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They're talking about Al TV.
Those are
mad
for Al, for sure.
Yeah, this wasn't one of those splice bits, which they do in this.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say, I want to clarify that because I have no evidence of this. This is just my assumption that Al, I guess, found himself in a video standing behind Paul and Linda McCartney and turned it into a 2-minute bit that is so fucking funny.
This is how I would do bits like this, like when I was younger, like pretend like I was part of something or whatever, and like I had no idea that Al had already done this and did this really fucking well too. Like, I actually had to watch it twice because I was like, wait, no, he's actually in this shot. Like,
I was gonna say, my first instinct was that they inserted him, and I was like, wait, this is 1985. There's no way they did
no
that.
No way.
It looks
There's
way
no way.
Too
it was
good.
Too clear.
Yeah.
It was too clear.
Do you think, so here's my question, because it's one of two things, right? Option number one is that he had the forward thinking of Al TV to see Paul McCartney being interviewed and was like, I'm going to get as close to this interview as I can and stand back there. Or did the interview air and he was like, oh shit, there I am, and then wrote the bit around that. Either way, it's hysterical because it's him like trying to get an interview, and then as soon as Linda McCartney moves, he stops talking and is just awkwardly standing there.
Yeah.
I have no idea how this kind of came to be. Like, clearly he did a voiceover on top of like the actual interview.
Yeah.
It was just like, hey, Paul, which was funny enough as is, but the fact that like Linda just ducks down and then you see him was... Like, you could not recreate that with CGI any better.
Given the nature of the footage, I think it had to have been a just freak coincidence thing. And he saw it and was like, we have to use this. Like, this is just too crazy that this happened this way. Like, I have to do something with it.
It feels like somebody was like, Al, you were in an interview. Like, Paul was like doing that interview and like you showed up behind him. Like, I feel like somebody was like, oh,
exactly.
Did you see yourself do that? And then he grabbed that clip or footage and was just like,
and just him trying to get his attention was the best idea they could find to like do something after the fact. But I mean, it is like you couldn't have scripted it better. It's so perfect.
It was perfect. So we did have to watch this on YouTube in a series of bits, and the second of the five clips is no longer on YouTube. I'm assuming some type of copyright issue. More confusing is that the third video is 4 minutes long.
Very
so I
short.
Don't know.
So short. I was actually like, did I click the wrong link? Like, did this autoplay into something else?
Yeah, it was very weird. There was only really two things that I was able to pull from that, which is that it's mostly just him doing viewer mail for that entire clip. And there's the one is the viewer sends a riddle, and it's, what does Tina Turner and Ted Turner have in common? They have the same last name.
And at the end, he's like, that was really good. Kind of a brain teaser.
Really hard thinker.
I love that he gives them a solar-powered flashlight. He goes,
flashlight is your prize. Yeah, that'll come in handy.
No, okay, but the other thing about this is he has people, he like does this thing, like, if you want to like send me a letter, send in, and he gives the address. And I looked up the address because I was like, where did they shoot this? He gives the address to the Laugh Factory. And I have no idea what the fuck, like, maybe that was like a corporate, you know, like headquarters or something, because they shot in Burbank, but Laugh Factory is down in like Hollywood proper.
That's
like
wild.
West Hollywood. Yeah. So he gives an address and I was like, I'm curious. So I looked it up, and immediate Google search was Laugh Factory on Sunset.
Well done looking that up, because I actually thought, I was like, I wonder what would happen if you tried to address something to this now. The Laugh Factory, that's crazy. Yeah. Wow.
So I don't know what it was before it was the Laugh Factory, because I think the Laugh Factory was established in like 2000s or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Are you sure? Wait, what was the one that Pauly Shore's mother ran, though? Wasn't that the Laugh Factory? Or is that the Comedy Store?
I think that might
be
the Comedy Store.
Mitzi's
comedy store.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind that. Yeah, maybe, I don't know, that maybe that was something beforehand. I always wonder how like There had to have been actual letters that he was getting. Like, I'm sure he combed through the letters for some bits. The only other thing that I had written down, and it is just strictly for my enjoyment, but I will read this. The last letter he reads says, "I will pay you $1 to rub some ding-dongs all over your face." and he grabs the ding-dongs and rubs them on his face, and he screams, "Okay, sucker, now pay up." And he, to my ears, sounded so much like Wallace Shawn in The Princess Bride yelling. Like, I was like, holy shit. And this is like before Princess Bride, so it's not like a reference to it or anything. He just has a very similar shrill screaming voice. We jump into the fourth of the five videos, which starts with this waffle bit that is so funny because it fails so bad. Like, whatever he was trying to do, it doesn't work.
He's like, he's trying to spray like whipped cream or something on top of like the letters. It's like a waffle, but it spells Al on it.
And he's spraying the TV onto it so that it's the
Al actually
TV
a
logo.
Hot waffle iron. Like, yeah, he puts some cream on it and it instantly starts like boiling.
Dissolving.
And then he takes the whole thing and shoves it right in his mouth. I was like, dude, that's hot. Be careful.
And then starts talking, which, as somebody with misophonia, I fucking hate it. Oh, God. I was just like, oh, God, no.
Yeah. It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free.
We're making an ad.
Napping ad.
This is where I think if we're doing it right, Alec Baldwin comes in. He says a couple things. Mm-hmm. He listens to the podcast every week. Yep. Has he been canceled? Was Alec Baldwin the one who killed somebody? I hear that Gary Sinise is free.
Oh, okay, great.
He hasn't worked since 2020.
So what would be the script that we would have Gary Sinise say for the Napping Through Happy Hour podcast?
Listen to this damn show. Damn it.
The Napping Through Happy Hour podcast brought to you by Geekscape.
Real life, real drama, real time.
I'm Gary Sinise.
That's the ad.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
But this is where we get to the real tough part, which is the combination of the Al Japanese tour slideshow into, and look, this might be complete ignorance on my part, but there's the Japanese Eat It music video, and I cannot tell you if this is real or made up for this show, because there was such a, like, there was were it? These like weird, cheap, low budget remakes of things constantly happening where I'm like, I don't know if he just found this thing and thought it was so strange and funny that he aired it, which is what I hope is what he did.
Yeah.
Or if they were like, let's just make this thing and make it insane, because, like, yo, those people over in Asia are just crazy. Like, I really hope it's not the latter.
I have the note, the Japanese bits making my butt pucker. And then also the choreography in the Japanese version of Eat It. I might do this for an audition that I have later on today, because they want me to do some kind of improvised, like, dance to any song I want. And now I'm kind of thinking of doing it.
So, yeah, you absolutely should. You will get that part. But but if you look it up, if you Google Weird Al Eat It Japanese version, all that comes up is
the clip
from Al TV. Like, yeah. I don't think this is from anything else. Which
and,
does
and it's short, like, it's not a full song.
It's not the whole
song,
yeah.
But he does have like an album song, but the recording is the same as on the VHS tape.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
It's not even the video. It's just like the like very fuzzy sounding
recording
of the tape.
I can only assume that he actually did do this for this latter reason you mentioned, Matt, which is that this just on paper is funny, which. Again, we were talking about it a couple episodes ago, the idea that at this point in the 80s, it was like just being foreign is funny. So yeah. Like right. Jokes about sushi, jokes about, like, he does the whole Japanese
the noodles,
montage.
He's
the
really
noodles.
Just, he's really eating stomach worms or something.
I guess,
or,
yeah, like, yeah, or like tapeworms. Yeah. Tapeworms. Oh, yeah. Like raw tapeworm. Yeah, all of that just like, I don't know. We found other cultures cringe. To be hilarious. It's very cringe. This, the Japanese video features, like the start of the video features a really, really uncomfortable upskirt shot that I gasped to myself. Yeah. I was like, I cannot believe that this is in here. Like, there are moments in this that are really, really tough. And again, you know, this is just the nature of comedy like this, especially like quick sketch comedy. Like, it just, not all of it ages very well.
A lot of sketch comedy doesn't age well. That's that's why it's written so fast. That's why it's produced so fast. That's why it's usually so janky.
Yeah.
Is because it's a commentary on the moment.
Of the moment. Yeah.
And yeah, these bits didn't. I mean, the funniest part that I actually laughed at was when Weird Al said that he was going around saying that he was Michael Jackson and he got really good at signing his autograph.
That I did like that. Yes, yes, yes.
That did make me laugh. Yeah. I was like,
Which, like, I do. Like, here's the thing that. Here's where I fall into the weird category of, like, not knowing how to feel about any of this. Is I also think that Eat It was, like, huge in Japan.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think that it was a... Was that... Matt, do you remember what was the country where it charted higher than Michael Jackson's Beat It? Was that in Japan?
It was not Japan. It was Australia.
Australia, okay.
In Australia, Eat It hit number one, and Beat It, I think, hit number three.
No. That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy? No, it was not Japan, but I do believe that... Okay. You know, I think it did do really well there.
Yeah, because there's a specific Japanese single artwork that's different than like the other, and it is, that is also not a great cover at all.
No, I, to be honest, I'm sure this footage, like the what he made the slideshow of,
I think it's from a real tour,
actual
for sure.
touring in Japan that he just decided to repurpose in this comedic way. Yeah, I mean. I don't know what else to say.
The slideshow the slideshow is way less offensive compared to the actual music. Like the slideshow
I was so concerned when he started doing the slideshow because I was like, please don't make fun of their accents. Please don't make fun of like anything else that's like so stereotypical of what comedy was doing with Asian folks back in the day. And I was just like, oh god. And it was actually fairly tame. He was mostly making fun of himself, but then there was like the guy in like the lobster costume that I was just like, I don't know.
it could have been a lot worse. The I was greeted by the mask, it could have been a lot worse for sure, but it is still,
and then
like
that video
the video is really tough. And again, it just makes you question, like, while you're watching it, you're like, I'm not sure what about this is supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
Like, that's the part. And then you just wind up cringing and being like, oh God, you're.
That's why I know that I'm wrong. I know that I'm wrong. But I want to believe that it was some weird relic that he just found in Japan where he's like, wait, someone reshot the Eat It music video? Like, I'll just air this because that's weird. But I think we're right. I think that they decided to produce it strictly for LTV, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, that seems most likely.
That I will say the thing that I didn't realize it was attached to the video until my second viewing of it, because some of these I had to watch again just to be like, did I see that, or is that the brain fog of COVID like coming at me? The bit at the very beginning of that music video where some guy is smoking with a cup of coffee and then they smack his head and the cigarette goes up his nose, and I was like, that's some like primo like slapstick comedy right there.
I it's funny, I did the same thing. I rewound because I was like, wait a minute, what just happened? What did I
miss? Because it didn't even seem like it was attached to the video at a certain point, and then I was like, they're in the same place. Got it.
All right, so after we get past Al just giving a 1-2 punch to Japan for some unknown reason, he does the music videos, like bloopers, what he calls it, but it's his version of a bloopers reel from music videos. And there's a couple good ones, but the one that made me laugh the most was the guy jumping off the building and just yelling, "You lied to me!"
Yes music video.
Yeah.
They pranked him that there was a safety net, and instead he just jumps off a building.
And it's just a guy falling, and it's so, like, it's so macabre.
Oh, yeah. It's very dark.
This is still just Al at his darkest, for sure. And that goes into the next mail letter segment, not the mail letter. It had the news segment that had one joke that really filled me with joy, which was the Rock and Roll Connection still being alive and well with the next match of Mr. T and Hulk Hogan versus Hall & Oates. Like,
oh my gosh.
At Madison Square Garden.
The poster that they show that they made is great.
What I would not give.
But then the Phil Collins "No Jacket Required" joke is so dumb that it filled me with so much joy.
Where it's like scratching the EPs and stuff. Like it's like it's everything's crashing. Like it's really bad for the records.
So there's the other contest that Al is having going on here. He's doing the Who Wants to Be Al's Roadie. But the bit, arguably the loudest laugh that came out of my mouth was when he was doing the contest to figure out what Duran Duran's music videos are about, and one of the answers were they're about 4 minutes long.
They're about 4 minutes long.
So great.
That... Also, how in that thing he's giving away the poster, right? I'm giving away a signed Duran Duran poster, but he's pointing at the poster. It's clearly not signed.
And he's just
and
pointing at the
names. Blank spaces. He's like, yeah, look, Andy Taylor.
You can clearly see. Like...
Shortly after this, he picks a winner. He crumples up the poster to ship it as quickly as possible. And then he starts running down the Dare to Be Stupid tour, which is always filled with fake dates. He loves bringing up the La Brea Tar Pits. I feel like it's been in every single fake tour shirt he's ever done. He plays at the La Brea Tar Pits. But the one that got me was Horny Bob's Yogurt Garden. That's one of the venues they're playing at.
Yeah, these are all fake dates. I feel like on the last one, he had like obviously fake ones. And then the other joke was like, and of course, we're ending our tour with 12 nights at Madison Square Garden. He's And then he did not bother with that on this. Because for a moment there, I actually was like, was Al playing Madison Square Garden at this point? Because, I mean, 12 is too many, but like one, like maybe.
One is
it's
maybe.
Not
possible.
Out of the question.
Yeah.
And then we jump into the final of the five YouTube videos, which starts off with a thing that you and I both loved the first time around, Matt. The fake commercials, the Sky High Skull Plate ad was definitely a highlight of this video for me. It's so strange and weird.
Did they shave that guy's head? That guy didn't look naturally bald. Like it
he
looked
did not.
Yeah.
That was some real commitment to a very small bit. Yes, but the recurring is solar powered thing that they mount with screws into your head. And then, the joke at the end of every single one is like, it's great. It's going to give you all the radio broadcast and you won't look like a jerk.
We skipped over the first couple of these because I feel like Jim kills it the most, but all of his bandmates show up to show their weird talents. And Jim's talent is that he will take an ice cube and using only his tongue, sculpture it to a pig. And it is just this 30-second shot of him just staring dead into the camera.
My favorite is you can lightly hear a producer in the background go, keep going. Do a little bit more of that. and he's clearly just like not even acting in the bit. He's just kind of just deadpanning like, okay, I'm just gonna move my jaw around for a minute. But the best thing that happens is his tagline, and he's like, anyone interested?
If you're interested,
anyone
you can reach me.
He starts giving his phone number.
And
that's
he's like,
the best. That's so funny.
The producer
he's like,
runs
interested?
In and cuts him off.
5-3-0. They're like, all right, that's enough.
But that, I mean, I feel like these all give a great example of like, you know, we talk about how Al has assembled arguably the three most musically talented people in the world to be his backup band, and that they have been a band since 1983 when they first put together this group. Like, that is an impressive amount of longevity. But beyond the musical talent, they all just have such a great comedic timing and sense of humor for like...
Totally.
Like, you can tell that they are a unit. It's not just like Al comes up with all the ideas and they just like are there to play the songs. Like, if he throws them a comedic idea, they are like, let's do it.
They're really, really good sports about the whole thing because, it's not hard to envision a scenario where it's an amazing guy, amazing bass player, amazing guitarist who's like, look, I'll play for you all you want, but I'm not comfortable
like being
going
in front of the
television
camera doing these bits
and doing ice sculptures with my tongue or whatever you want me to do. And they're so down for whatever kind of wacky
Even
thing.
Even in their 70s now, they're still
you want
us to dress up in costume? Sure, let's do it. Like, they just
go with
it.
They're so, such a great... I mean, it adds a lot to the Al's ability to his show and the, all of it. The fact that they are on board for all of it is just so huge.
That honestly, and that's kind of what you have to be in sketch comedy, because this stuff doesn't always age well. You have to be in a fuck it attitude, like, who gives a shit. Like, I remember one of my all-time favorite notes after a show was just someone who came to see like a sketch show that I was in and just said, "Katie, you are so beautiful, but you make the ugliest faces that I've ever, like, it makes me a little sick sometimes." And I'm like,
"Oh God,
thank you." Yeah.
So there is one big thing that we have to talk about, but before we get there, last time that we did LTV, both Matt and I gasped at the introduction of Harvey the Wonder Hamster.
Yes.
And now we get the debut of the Harvey the Wonder Hamster theme song, and I, in all caps, the theme song debuted. Like,
the theme song debut, which in this context almost seems like he just improv'd that.
Yeah, just ripped
doesn't it?
It really did. And I was like, I was like, oh, this is probably the first time he's done this song.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, is this literally the first time he's recorded this song?
I think it is. And it really, in the moment, I don't think we'll ever know, but like, it so seems like he just is like, let's sing a song for Harvey, and he just makes this up.
But that's what I think that's the stuff, you know, problematic stuff aside, the jokes that didn't age to the side.
Yeah.
The best parts about this is that there are so many points where it feels like there is no script. There is like nothing that has been laid out. It's just like, all right, this is the bit we're going to do, and action. And he just like wings it and just goes.
Yeah. And they're trying to fill time.
Yeah.
That's how it feels with Jim West and Steve Jay, who does the weird, like, just showing that he can bend his fingers backwards.
And then it's just that weird cracking noise as he's
that like, cracking noise as you go.
It's clearly made by like people's mouths or like.
Yeah.
And I will never get sick of Al doing a bit with Harvey and then immediately just tossing him over his shoulder.
Yeah,
and like
and
it was
just
a,
throws him.
It was a clear cut, so like, you know, no animals harmed. But like, that was so fucking funny to me because I was like, oh, this is like an iconic moment. This is the first time the song happens, and then he just chucks the hamster behind.
Yes. Well, that was fun.
But then
throws
we get
him against the back wall.
You know, he's been doing these since the first Al TV, but the Madonna interview is really where I think he starts to figure out how to do these.
This is
these
absolutely
interviews.
The first one of these that hits the marks that you expect. Like, this is fantastic.
This was one of this was one of my all cap notes. And I was like, oh, this is what they do in late night now, where they have a very standard interview that they splice in them doing questions that kind of fit the answers that's given.
Yeah.
Holy shit, he did this so well.
It's totally out.
Him telling her, like, well, first of all, the opening question is like, when you think of Al Yankovic, what do you think? And she says, like, nonstop sexual energy.
I know. I was like, there it is.
But then it's not even the responses. Like, the responses, it's kind of easy. Not easy, but it's like you can comb through an interview and you can find, like, a funny answer to a question and then ask a ridiculous question to make that answer seem even more weird. But when he's like doing the interview and he's just like, oh, well, wait, Michael Jackson's over there. And it just cuts to the footage of Madonna, like, looking over her shoulder for a second. Like, that's
I'm just
so
messing with you.
And then it zooms in, like, on her bracelet on her arm. And he's like, oh, what's this?
Oh,
yeah.
I have an all caps thing here because here's Matt Kelly, like, movie nerd. Here he goes, oh, what is that, some type of Dick Tracy wristwatch? And I wrote in all caps, holy shit, he mentioned she's wearing a Dick Tracy wristwatch 5 years before the Dick Tracy movie starring Madonna was conceived.
Wait, that's a
thing? See, I didn't even realize that. I didn't realize the years on it. I assumed that had happened.
Dick Tracy
crazy.
Was a 1991 release.
Like,
wow. Whoa.
That's crazy.
So to pull such a bizarre, like, no one was thinking about Dick Tracy in 1985. Like you said, he is an oracle. Like,
he is an oracle. We were talking, like, we said it with George of the Jungle. He did the George of the Jungle theme song at a time where nobody should have any reason to give a shit about that. Like, it's really, really astonishing how much he can foresee culture.
Tap into the culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that's definitely, and it's funny too, because, you know, in considering just like indie comedy or independent comedy, where it's like all of these like crazy wacky things where people are just kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall, just trying to see what sticks. It's so interesting to see what bits continue on today, you know, like Trevor Noah's stuff, like late night things, like those correspondents, all of those, they always do the splice interview, the one-sided splice interview.
Totally.
Like some of these like ridiculous, like celebrity cameo bits, like it's so prevalent in so many different versions of comedy, but it's like they're cherry picking like the stuff that they're like, I don't know why, but that made me giggle so much, you know?
Yes. Oh, when he's just doing almost like a Simon Says thing with her, where it's like, all right, pick your nose, but only a little bit. And it like, going like,
roll your eyes for me. Yeah. No, do a bigger eye roll than that.
And I'm like, I'm curious about that original interview as well.
I know, me too.
Who was?
That's always what it sheds light on. She must have been really like bored.
Because she said something to the effect of like, I guess I'm not a great interviewee or something.
Yeah,
I was like, who was really interviewing you?
So the only other two things I want to bring up from this interview, first of all, when he starts with, do you want to hear a joke? And it's a Helen Keller joke. I was like, oh, no. Like, I got real nervous. I was pleasantly surprised how much I actually laughed at that punchline.
Yeah, like, that was all right. In the world of 80s Helen Keller comedy, that was pretty good.
But the line that I will use for every interview now is just in the middle where he goes, okay, shut up now, I've got another question for you.
I was just gonna say I love when he's like, what's it like being, and he's just like, oh, you know, being on the bus is tough, and you know, you put a lot of work, and he's like, oh yeah, shut up, all right, move on. The way he just cuts her off is so great. I love it.
It's
also fun, you know, at the time we're recording this, we have not seen the Weird Al movie yet,
right?
But I loved seeing the dynamic. Again, this is a fake dynamic, but even I feel like you still get the sense that Al at this point has met Madonna and they're friendly, at least we know that, because she approved Like a Surgeon. She suggested Like a Surgeon.
Perfect.
And so to see this, him playing this dynamic in this way, just really made me smile, because like, I love that he was doing this with someone who was a friend and kind of like a musical ally to him at this time. Like, it adds a level of playfulness to the whole thing that is just, I don't know, I loved seeing it. It was great.
You know what's the other thing that actually, I'm thinking about it right now, and this is like a big thing in comedy in general, and it's a big thing specifically now in comedy, but I think the biggest reason why everything else works except for the Japanese stuff is the Japanese stuff is the only time where Al's punching down in this entire special. Right. You know what I mean? Like, everything else, like, he is either making fun of himself or absolutely making fun of someone in such a higher stratosphere of their career than he will ever be. Like
the stuff with like the music videos, like when he like I forget the song, but he's like burning the paper and then he dumps water on it and puts it in an ashtray.
Yeah,
he's like he's promoting like fire safety habits or something like that. I was like, what a genius way, because he's working for MTV. He's probably got the rights to, you know, reuse any music video clip or whatever. It reminds me when I was working for Warner Brothers and there were like Disney properties that we couldn't talk about on live on air. So we would just be like, rights cleared. We just always emphasize something like rights cleared tic-tac-toe or something like that. Yeah. We weren't allowed to legally say, but we would always say rights cleared before it to make it parody. And it felt like a lot of this, like, what a great way to just pull different IPs and things like that and make jokes out of stuff that's already popular, that's already like high in, you know, the global concept. But
And I think Al gets away from it too, because he is like the king of nerds. You know what I mean? Like, it's never, he's not punching down on like other people for being a nerd, but just playing up like, I am such a, like, even like we said in the very beginning with the one night stand bit, while that bit doesn't really age well, like the joke is like, what a terrible prize to have to spend a night hanging out with this dork. Like,
exactly.
That's like what the goal of that joke is. It's like, he is the butt of more jokes in this than any other person. And when that person is the butt of the joke, it is like, is Prince going to lose sleep over the fact that Weird Al made fun of him? Like, is Madonna going to be heartbroken by the way that interview was like recut? Like, absolutely not. Like, he's, and I, I agree with you, Matt. I think Madonna was very much in on the joke, which makes that so much more enjoyable to watch. Is like you can tell that that is
totally.
I'm making fun of a friend of mine. Like I'm making fun of someone who I consider a peer.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah. What? Yeah. There's love there. You can really tell.
Which is why like this feels like a directly influence between Two Ferns. Like taking your massive celebrities and really ripping them apart. Like, I mean, one of my favorite things is to watch the bloopers of Between Two Ferns when they're all laughing and just being like, God, this is so mean. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. No, there's something because everything about these, what he's making fun of, these press junkets are always just about worshiping these people. Right. And it's no real conversation. It's just celebrity praise.
Right.
And so him flipping it the other way is just so...
It's funny and surprising. Goes against the grain because we've all been in those sort of corporate things where you're like you need to speak nicely even if you didn't like this property, you need to speak nicely about it in order to promote it, and it's like Jesus. So like the comedy bit of just like actually saying what you really want to say but still having that love for that person and what they do is
totally
just chef's kiss.
He's not making fun of the person. He's making fun of the entire thing that's happening around him. Like, how silly is it that we have to do this?
He's making fun of the celebrity, which I think will be ageless. I think that will never be something that can be canceled. Like, always, that's why they always say, you know, punch up, don't punch down.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a great... And I'm glad you brought up Between Two Ferns, because that's something I haven't thought about in a really long time. But man, the early days of that show, like the pre-Hangover era, where there was a part of you that, like, you may have known who Zach Galifianakis was, but you're watching it wondering, like, is the person being interviewed know that this is a bit? Like there is that awkwardness where you're like, was this, like, an ambush? Like, was this, like, we're going to bring in this?
Totally.
Because in your mind...
Eric Andre had the same thing, too.
Right.
Yeah. A very similar vibe of not totally understanding how much of this is... Like, how in on the joke the other person
the
is.
Other person's and I feel
it's
like it's funny because
Fielder thing
Nathan Fielder another good one totally.
I think part of it is that it plays with people's expectations that like people that are at this level of celebrity will only ever know or care about people of that level of celebrity. So it'd be like, why would John Hamm ever know or care who Zach Galifianakis is in a pre-Hangover world? But it's like then you find out like later on, like, oh, John Hamm is the biggest comedy fan
nerd
you could ever
find. Totally.
Like,
he's like, such a comedy nerd.
It's so good. We're just my friend and I were just talking about that because I was introducing them to the state. They had no clue who the state was, but they were familiar with Wet Hot American Summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I forget his name, but the actor from Law and Order who's in Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
But we were saying like him and John Hamm both fall in this category where it's like they're attractive, like prototypical, like jacked up dudes. So they keep getting put in these like heartthrob or tough guy roles. But then like you really look at like whenever they can do a movie that's not for the money, but for the passion, it's always time and time again, the most abstract comedy shit they can get their hands on. Cause it's like, that's where their heart is. Like their passion and heart is the comedy.
Yeah, totally.
Role.
Christopher Maloney.
Christopher Maloney. Yeah. From
he
Happy.
Pops up all the time. If you don't know that person by name, look up his picture because you've seen him in things. He's a great character actor.
He's a fantastic character actor. He's also a very good serious actor, which that's one of the things that I think, like, if you're a fantastic actor just in drama and whatnot, translating to comedy is like, it's like getting an EGOT. Like, that's impressive as hell. Because, like, there are comedians that don't transition to drama. But when you have a dramatic actor that transitions to comedy, it's like, look, you could be Tom Hanks. You could be John Hamm. Like, it's insane.
You got to be real good to do
real
that.
Real good,
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that's it for Al TV Volume 3. But Katie, before we go, what are you up to? You got a couple podcasts that you show up on and a bunch of other fun things.
I do. I show up on a couple of things. I show up on the Geekscape podcast. I show up on Geekscape Games every now and then when I'm not sick. I also have a podcast of my own called the Black and White Podcast that I do with my good friend Marie Brand. We just basically shoot the shit. So if anybody wants to come on at any point, come on. We just talk about whatever, life, anything. And then if you are listening to this later on, check out the movie Unfrosted. You might see a familiar name in there. That is a Jerry Seinfeld movie that I will be somewhat in.
Oh, that's the Pop-Tarts movie. Yeah. I heard about this. Oh, I had no idea. That's crazy. Oh, I'm so excited.
I know. It was a really fun time on set. It was a blast. Wow. And Jerry is hysterical.
Oh, that's...
Wait, stop the presses. Jerry Seinfeld is funny?
I know. It's weird. I know. I'm
breaking
I'm
news.
Give that guy a TV weird show algorithm or something.
As Scott Aukerman says, I'm going to give you a sklusy.
Oh, that's great.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Katie. We'll be sure to have you back. We'll be sure to have Mark on pretty soon.
Yes.
As well. You got to get me that list of songs that Mark wants to talk about, and we'll get him on the show.
You got it.
And we'll be back next week with more Weird Al history being discussed.
History.
History.
Herstory.
Herstory.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
We're making an ad.
Napping yeah. ad.
This is where I think if we're doing it right, Alec Baldwin comes in. He says a couple things. Mm. He listens to the podcast every week. Yep. Has he been canceled? Was Alec Baldwin the one who killed somebody? I hear that Gary Sinise is free.
Oh, okay, great.
He hasn't worked since 2020.
So, what would be the script that we would have Gary Sinise say for the Napping Through Happy Hour podcast?
Listen to this damn show. Damn it.
The Napping Through Happy Hour podcast brought to you by Geekscape.
Real life, real drama, real time.
I'm Gary Sinise.
That's the
ad.
That's the ad. That's the ad.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.